welcome to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Martellaro, and this week my guest is John Chaffee, the founder and CEO of BusyMac. John, good afternoon. Thank you for being with us.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me. I'm pleased to be here.
One of the things that we're doing on Background Mode is interviewing all the people that are of interest to me, the people that I'm familiar with and know, and a lot of people I don't know, and people who are developers and executives, and just sort of getting to know people better. And of course, we've known each other for quite a while. Mm-hmm. You got me all excited about BusyCal back at, I think, at a WWDC when we met.
Oh, that's right.
Quite a while ago. Mm-hmm. So perhaps we can start with your career background. That always interests me. I like to know where people have come from and arrive at a waypoint in their lives and end up in this Apple developer business.
Sure. So I've been doing software development for over 25 years, mostly in the Mac space. So I'm old, and I actually got started way back in the late 80s at a company called SuperMac, which you may or may not recall. They did hard drives and then later color displays when color displays were new. But as a case in point of how long ago this was, SuperMac sold a 40 megabyte hard drive for $2,000.
Oh my goodness.
And that's megabytes, not gigabytes. So times have really changed as far as storage is concerned. But yeah, that's where I got my start. Not long after that, in the early 90s, I worked at a company called Now Software, which developed a calendar app called Now UpToDate.
Oh, I remember that.
Yep.
Oh,
and that's famous. Pretty much the predecessor to BusyCal today. And in fact, I was the product manager for Now UpToDate, and Dave Riggle, the co-founder of BusyMac, was the engineer who wrote it. So we first worked together about 24 years ago. On that product. And this was way back during Mac System 7, so well before there was OS 10. And back in those days, there was no built-in calendar app. So there was really a thriving third-party software market in general, but even in the calendar space, there was probably, you know, half a dozen calendar apps available back then. And I think Now UpToDate was probably the most popular. So that was in the early, in the early 90s. Fast forward to 2007, and that's when we founded, that's when Dave and I co-founded BusyMac. So we kind of returned to our roots. We went our separate ways. Neither one of us was at Now Software as of 2000 or so. I mean, I left much earlier than that, but Now Software went through many different owners. And in fact, the product Now UpToDate lived on for quite a long time, and I think the company just went out of business maybe 3 years ago, 3 to 5 years ago. They were selling Now UpToDate right up until that point. But Dave and I had nothing to do with Now UpToDate in the last 10 years or so.
You talked about returning to your roots. Was that in concert with a feeling that iCal was not cutting it for your personal use, or that you'd felt that it wasn't as capable as you wanted it to be in your experience? Was that a driving force?
There were probably two things. So I'd had to backtrack a little bit. So before we founded BusyMac, Dave and I had another company started in 2001 called Splash Data, which developed mobile apps. But this was back in the days of the Palm handhelds, as well as the Handspring Visor and other devices. And we actually
the old days.
Yeah. We developed mobile software for Palm OS, Windows Mobile, and Symbian. So we were doing mobile apps well before the iPhone existed. We did that for about 7 years. And it was really challenging because there were so many different vendors and form factors. On my desk I had like a charging station that could charge 12 phones at a time so that I could test on all these devices, and it was just chaotic. And by the time the iPhone came along, I was completely burnt out on mobile software and wanted to have nothing to do with it. Mm. And so that was one of the reasons why I was attracted to going back to doing Mac software, because I was still a Mac user and I loved using the Mac. And I did feel at the time that there was quite a bit of stagnation, you know, in the Mac calendar space. It was basically there was iCal and not much else. And we didn't think iCal was that great. And we both
had truth be told, I didn't either.
And we both had experience doing calendar apps back from our now up-to-date days, so we decided let's take another shot at that. So that was, 8 years ago when we started BusyMac, and we started in on doing a calendar app, and it was an incremental thing. We first released a system preference pane called BusySync, which was kind of a faceless app, but what it allowed you to do was take iCal and share calendars with other iCal users over the local area network using our little background system preference pane, which was a feature that now UpToDate had, 25 years ago, which was the ability to share calendars over a local area network. So we kind of incrementally approached it, from the back end without a full-blown calendar app, but our intention all along was to build a full-blown calendar app that would replace or compete with iCal. And it took us a few years, but we eventually did release BusyCal. I don't remember what year. It was probably 2009. I think it was about 6 years ago. And we've been, improving it ever since.
I think it's a great app. I've been using it ever since you released it. And it has served me well. And the ability to sync calendars and have everything on my phone and between Macs and the features of BusyCal had just saved me over and over again.
Oh, great. Thanks. Glad you like it.
So it's you and Dave Riegel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's it for your company, right? And you're not in the same place?
Right. We're just a two-person company. We're virtual. I work from my home in the Seattle area, and Dave works from his home in Silicon Valley. And we also have a contractor that helps us out with tech support. But we're, I guess, what you'd call a lifestyle business. We jokingly say, yeah, but it's a hell of a lifestyle. Because it is a lot of work being an indie developer. But we do have the advantage of working from our homes and being able to watch our kids grow up and having a flexible schedule. So we're not complaining. But it's really is a lot of work to be an indie developer because there's so many hats you need to wear.
Well, I'm curious, what ties you to Seattle?
My wife. She was born and raised here. But I'm glad. I actually grew up in Hawaii, which is kind of the opposite of Seattle. We met, back in the days when I was working at Supermac and then now software, and I was in the Bay Area at the time. But we slowly worked our way back up here to Seattle to be closer to her family, and I'm glad we did. It's a beautiful place. It's been a great place to raise kids. Both of my kids are at college now, so my wife and I recently became empty nesters.
That's a big thing.
Yeah, my productivity has skyrocketed, though, I'll tell you, because there are no more distractions here at the home.
Yeah, it's great being able to work out of a home office. I jokingly talk about how I get to walk to work in the morning down the stairs.
Exactly. It's a good commute.
Yes. How do you feel about, just as an aside, since we're both working out of home offices, have you had any adjustments to make in terms of working out of the house, time management, distractions? I notice that sometimes I don't eat as well as I should because it's so easy to get food, and yet you're so busy that you just say, later, 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 I'm busy.
Interesting.
Things like that.
Yeah, I've definitely had to make some adjustments. Different than yours, I think, but I've been working out of my home since 2001, since that previous company, Splash Data. So I've got 15 years of practice doing it now.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely early on, I was more what you described, where you would just work 24/7 because it was really hard to escape from work. It's all, your computer's always there, particularly when that there's tech support messages coming in from customers and you want to solve mm-hmm. their problems as quickly as possible and you mm-hmm. don't want to let those pile up. So really hard to separate your work from your family and just relaxation time. But I think I've just gotten better at it. I work out regularly. I like to play tennis or go biking and I always make time for that. And it really has helped just me with both physically and mentally, and just I think I'm more productive when I do that. I actually, my diet is actually really good as a result of working at home because I don't go out to eat for lunch.
Right.
You know, I make my lunch here.
All
so
those
I think,
calories and bad additives. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think the key is really taking advantage of your freedom. And so, case in point, you know, with the tech support or whatnot, you know, I don't have to be at my desk from 9 to 5. I can do things during the day if I need a break, and I can catch up with it in the evenings if I want. It's a little easier now because the kids are not around and I don't have to feel guilty about taking away from them. So I don't know. I think I've come to master it, and I've come to really appreciate it too, especially when I talk to friends who have to commute to work, you know, and the meetings that they're in all day and everything. And it really, I read the Dilbert comic strip every day religiously because it always reminds me of what it's like to work in corporate America and why I'm so lucky not to have to deal with that.
It was nice when I worked at Lockheed Martin. I got to drive down a country road from the mountains. And it was just a beautiful drive through the pine trees. I didn't have to fight traffic on I-25 or anything like that. It was great. But being able to walk to work is even better.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to ask you, how did you feel about the Mac market when you first started? And have your feelings changed about the marketplace for Macintosh software lately?
I think the Mac market has always been very resilient. You know, its market share is low. It's a niche market, which is what we like about it. But it hasn't had big shifts in market share. It seems like it's always growing a little bit, but it's always been in that 5 to 10% range or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been impacted the way I think the PC market has recently, which has been declining. So the Mac market's been very steady. So I like that aspect about it. The business of making software for the Mac has changed a lot. So, you know, back in the days of, you know, now software and stuff, in those days, in the 90s, you know, we were developing software on, we were distributing software on a floppy disk in a shrink-wrapped retail box. So customers would go into Egghead or whatever, and they'd buy our software that way. And, you know, so it was very costly to create and distribute the software, and you couldn't release immediate updates, you know, with bug fixes and such.
Right.
And there's much longer development times. So that was very different than today, where everything is done online, both from a distribution standpoint as well as a commerce standpoint. You know, you can sell software direct from your own website, or you can sell it through the Mac App Store for the most part. Those are the two primary channels. The cost of software has declined quite a bit. So a lot has changed from the distribution standpoint. I think Apple in general is moving at a much more rapid pace. I mean, back in the good old days, the OS was upgraded maybe every 3 years. Now it's done on an annual basis. And so you're constantly trying to keep up with Apple's latest changes to their OS, just from a compatibility standpoint, but also to be taking advantage of the latest, you know, features that they've added.
Is that creating a very stressful situation, or is it just pleasantly aggressive?
I'd say more of the former, stressful,
because
it's hard to. It's hard to do any long-range planning. Like every year around June, you get this little pit in your stomach because WWDC is coming.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, okay, what is Apple going to do this time? Because they're very secretive, and you have some ideas. You know, there's the rumors floating around, but you don't really know for sure what they're going to do. You know a new version of the OS is coming. You don't know when they're going to ship it. You don't know what features are going to be there or whether they're going to charge for it. But all of that is starting to become a little bit more predictable, thankfully. And it's also nice that they're starting to do public betas, too. But yeah, it's both excitement and dread.
Is El Capitan a welcome respite for you in that it's more of a tune-up?
Yes, I do like that. I prefer these incremental updates versus big, major changes. So I'm pretty happy with El Capitan.
Cool.
And again, the public beta helped with that too, because we there were more customers using it early on, and so it helped us to find problems if there were any early on.
You mentioned the Mac App Store a little while ago. Tell us a little bit about how you came to be on the Mac App Store and how that's working out for you. Is it helping? How much of it is accounting for your revenue? I mean, has it been a boon for the business or just a supplement?
I'd say it's mostly been a supplement. It was a boon initially. So when they first launched the Mac App Store, and I think this is true probably for most developers, it appeared to be incremental sales, more sales on top of the sales you were already getting from your direct efforts. Over time, that has declined, and now I think it's just another distribution channel where customers can get your software. Mm-hmm. If you had to compare the two, so to give you a little history, when we released BusyCal 2, which is about 3 years ago, we went all in on the Mac App Store and released it as a Mac App Store exclusive, so that that was the only way you could purchase it. Because leading up to that, it was looking like, you know, Apple had added sandboxing and made some other moves where it was looking like, oh, geez, they might require apps to be distributed through the Mac App Store. So we figured, let's just bite the bullet and go all in on this and see what happens. Well, that didn't turn out to be the case, fortunately, that you can still buy software direct. But at the time, we weren't certain. So we went all in, and we really infuriated a lot of our customers because we had an installed base of BusyCal 1 customers, and then when we released BusyCal 2, there was no way to offer them upgrade pricing, so they had to buy it new. And we tried to appease them by lowering the price initially for all customers, but that still annoyed existing customers because they didn't feel like they were being treated fairly, and I would agree with that. So it was kind of a bittersweet thing. The sales went well for us on the Mac App Store, and our ranking was very good because we were selling exclusively on the Mac App Store, but we were giving 30% of every sale to Apple, which is the cut that they take. But we stuck with it for about 2 years, and then we decided we were going to start selling it direct again. And we did it, and we did it very quietly. We didn't make a big announcement about it, but in very short order, our sales split shifted. I'd say it's about 2/3 of it is now direct, and 1/3 of it is through the Mac App Store.
How do you explain that? Was because the customers just were determined to get it directly because of some perceived advantage, or?
Mm-hmm. Well, what? I think that the Mac App Store is a good vehicle for attracting new customers, mm-hmm. but it's not a good vehicle for existing customers. So that doesn't really answer your question. Our app is...
This is a good point, though.
Yeah. So I'll come back to that. But our app is a power user app. So it's not really for Joe, you know, your average consumer. it's going to more appeal to probably someone like yourself who's been using a Mac for a long time and recognizes the shortcomings of using the built-in calendar app, and is very familiar with third-party software developers or applications, and that you can buy them direct. And a lot of the savvy people realize that if they purchase direct, the developer will make more money because they're not giving 30% to Apple. But I think that that's not the real motive. The real motive is the fact that they know that they can get software updates from developers immediately, whereas software updates that go through the Mac App Store have to go through a vetting process where you submit it to Apple, you wait a week or so for them to approve it and hope that they do, and then...
You can't charge for it.
Well, I'm not talking about the upgrades. I'm talking about even just software updates, like which we might do every, month or something,
right.
Just to address bugs and other issues. And if you encounter a critical bug in your software, you want to get it into customers' hands as quickly as possible. And if you're a direct customer, we can get that software into your hands immediately. But if you're a Mac App Store customer, it could take a week or two before we can get that software into your hands. And that is a very stressful situation because, a good portion of the time you submit these minor as far as changes are concerned, incremental updates to the Mac App Store, and they may get rejected from Apple for some obscure reason, which wasn't a problem previously. And then you had to go through a process of trying to get them to approve it anyway. And it's very tedious. You know, I should have looked at this before our call, but, you know, maybe we release an update on average once a month. Okay, so that's 12 updates a year. And we wait on average a week or more for those updates to get approved by Apple. Well, that's 12 weeks of waiting. So that's 3 months of time wasted waiting to get an update into our customers' hands when, you know, they could have those bug fixes and we could know right away that they're working and everybody's happy and nobody's frustrated. So that part is a real sour point for me. It's one of many. But now let me talk about the other side of the coin. Like I said, the Mac App Store is a great way for new customers to discover us who may be less savvy or never have heard of Busy Mac. They can go onto the Mac App Store and browse around and find apps that they never heard of before, and they can purchase them. And it's also a great way, despite the long approval times, for customers to get their software updated. It just happens automatically. All their apps get updated through the Mac App Store. They don't have to get updates individually from the developers, who all may use slightly different mechanisms for distributing updates. So it's six of one and a half dozen of the other.
Well, guess what? It's time for a commercial break.
All right, stay
with me, and I just want our listeners to know that there is a great way you can help support the Mac Observer and all our podcasts. Here's how you do it. When you're thinking about buying something from, say, Apple's online store, don't go direct. Use the link on our homepage. You'll find it on the right side of the TMO homepage under the banner Support TMO. If you click on the Apple Store link, you don't pay any more, but the Mac Observer gets a small fee for bringing business to Apple's way, and that helps support the Mac Observer and all the things we do for you, the news, the tips, the how-tos, and our podcasts, and everything else. So help support the Mac Observer. Go click on the Apple Store from our homepage, and it'll help us out, and it'll help us help you. Okay, John.
This
has been a great discussion. When you were talking, I got curious about something. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not on track, but just let me try one on you. Well, you had to probably make some structural changes to BusyCal to be in the Mac App Store.
Mm-hmm.
Did those changes turn out to be beneficial for your direct sales, or do you regret that you had to make them? Or did it make your app more secure? How did that work out?
I think the general feeling, certainly by us and most developers, is that the work that was necessary to do to get on the Mac App Store was a lot of work with not very or any visible changes for customers. It was all under the hood, mm-hmm. to adhere to the sandboxing requirements. And other requirements of getting on the Mac App Store, such as not using any private APIs or requiring explicit permission from customers if you're going to install something in the menu bar or access location services or the calendar or contacts. All that stuff requires permission from the user. And so what we had to do to get BusyCal approved on the Mac App Store is we unfortunately had to add a wizard-like interface. So the first time you launch it, you're presented with a series of dialog boxes asking you questions like, please grant BusyCal access to your calendar.
Mm-hmm.
So that they are, please let us get access to your location services.
Well, customers are familiar with that now. I mean, they kind of run through that on iOS. They kind of know what's happening.
Yes. And I understand why Apple does it. It does make things more secure. I wish they could come up with a better way to implement it because it's really tedious. But those are examples of changes we had to make to BusyCal to get on the Mac App Store that didn't really add any new, you know, customer-facing features for the customer, but just allowed us to adhere to the guidelines.
So are you guys still going to WWDC these days?
We haven't been to a WWDC in a while. I must have gone to 20 WWDCs in a row. Up until maybe 3 or 5 years ago when it got to the point where it was impossible to get a ticket.
Sold out in 90 seconds.
Yeah. And the focus became much more iOS-centric. And we are purely Mac, so it wasn't as necessary for us to be at WWDC. And so we weren't too upset that we weren't able to get tickets. Probably the biggest benefit, or one of the big benefits of going to WWDC for me anyway, is that it's in the Bay Area, which is where my business partner lives. And it was, you know, one time a year when we were able to see each other in person and do some long-range planning and stuff. So that part I do miss. But the fact that Apple now is recording all the sessions and releasing them, you know, within hours in many cases is great, really. It allows us to stay right where we are and still feel like we're there.
One of the fantasies I've had over the years, and you've probably felt my nudges from time to time, is that your company has a tradition of improving on the stock apps like Calendar and Contacts. There's a circle of us, me and Kirk McElhern and Kelly Guillemot and some other people who collectively kind of feel like, boy, we wish we had a correspondingly better mail application, email. And one of my fantasies has been that you guys would take up that challenge, you know, and do busy mail and save us all. But we talked about this before the show, and you had some thoughts on that. I wanted to have you talked to the listeners about that?
Sure. It's funny. We get a lot of requests for busy mail, and you know, we're not working on a busy mail. I can tell you that for sure. But
rats.
Maybe someday. You know, an example of that would be when we released BusyCal. You know, 6 years ago. We immediately started getting requests for a contact manager app that would act as a companion. Because as you may remember back in the 90s when we had Now Up to Date, there was a companion app called Now Contact, which integrated with it.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people thought, yeah, calendars and contacts, those really go well together. And you know, we got those same requests here at BusyMac. So we knew we wanted to do a contact manager, but we knew it was going to take some time, and we were very diligent, you know, as a two-person company. And incidentally, I mean, Dave does all the programming, and I do the other half of the business, you know, sales, marketing, tech support, and all that. So we both have our hands full, and there's only so much we can do. So we resisted the urge to do a contact manager for many years because we didn't feel we were anywhere near where we wanted to be with BusyCal, you know, in 1.0. And it took us a while to do 2.0 and then 2.5. But we did get it to a point where we thought, okay, we've got all the features in that we want right now. We can probably afford to work on busy contacts. And we did that. But it's very challenging because big projects like busy contacts, I mean, took us 18 months from, you know, start to finish before we were able to release that app. And, you know, during that time, we were not able to do anything significant with BusyCal other than, you know, bug fixes and things. And so it took a long time. And so, like, BusyMail is an example. It's like, yeah, that does sound great. Wouldn't it be fun to do that? But if we were to do something like that, we'd have to neglect our existing apps for a very long period of time.
And it would be a major effort, more than 18 months probably.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be. Yes. So it's not to be taken lightly, you know. Right now, we are more focused on, you know, improving our existing apps. It's great. We've been a one-product company for the first 6 or 7 years of our existence, and now we're a two-product company, and that's a lot, you know, for a two-person company. So we have big plans for both BusyCal and BusyContacts that we're working on, and you know, for the time being, that's what we're going to stay focused on.
The current versions are ready for El Capitan, right?
Yes, we released updates recently for El Capitan, and we have some other updates in the works that will be released shortly as well.
Before the show, we were talking about, did you want to talk about any plans for, you know, future products? And, of course, that's always a touchy subject for developers. And you and I were chatting about the Osborne effect before the show.
Exactly. So, The Osborne effect, for the benefit of any listeners that, who haven't heard of it, comes from Adam Osborne, who was the inventor, I think, of one of the first portable computers. Was it the K-Pro?
No, K-Pro was a competitor.
Okay, oh, that's right. It was probably called the Osborne.
Yes.
Osborne 1, right. So the Osborne 1 was this amazing computer that probably looked like a sewing machine or something like that, right? I mean, it was kind of a big portable computer.
It was a monster, a little tiny 5-inch screen or something like that.
Yeah. And it was very popular, and at the big trade show back then, I don't know what it was, maybe CES or something, but they announced the Osborne 2. You know, it was going to have bigger floppy drives or 64K of RAM or who knows what. And people were super excited about it, but it wasn't available for sale yet. They were still working on it. And they pre-announced the Osborne 2, and as a result, everybody stopped buying the Osborne 1. And before they could even ship the Osborne 2, they ran out of money and went out of business. So that's what's known as the Osborne effect.
It's legendary in the product community.
Right. So we're pretty tight-lipped about our future plans because, you know, we're a small company, and if we pre-announced a future version and our current version's sales stopped, we would go out of business. So we try not to do that. It's challenging, though, because the Mac App Store, or the App Store on iOS in particular, has really devalued the price of software, I think, and people expect software to be free, or at least updates or upgrades to be free for life. You know, even Apple is now selling their operating system upgrades for free, as well as their iWork applications and everything else. So it's really made it challenging for third parties to justify charging money for their software. Now, the good thing about being a Mac developer is that I think the Mac customers are a little bit more understanding of the value of software, and they're willing to pay, you know, a reasonable amount for it. And that's one of the reasons why we've remained Mac-focused all this time. But it is challenging to work on a new product or even an upgrade to an existing product that you want to charge for, because it takes time. And then will people feel like it's justified to pay for it? And so, you know, that those are the types of things you have to deal with as an indie.
Interesting. I think the listeners will probably be very pleased to hear about what life is like for an independent developer like yourself. This is great background information.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we're kind of running out of time. Mm-hmm. So I think it's time to wrap up. It's been a real pleasure to get to know you better and hear about your life as a Macintosh developer. I want to wish you continued success. And if you ever do decide to do that busy mail, I'll be the first person in line as a customer.
All right, we'll make you a beta tester if it ever happens.
John, thanks again for being on TMO's Background Mode.
And thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us today. I hope you had a good time. We'll see you next time.